Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. The Heat are off until Tuesday, but I got so many great questions recently that I had no choice but to record a second mailbag episode. Questions were sent in during games or at any point using the hashtag AskLOHeat or via email at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com, something that you can always do, but let's get into it. Jordan Maley asks, do you think the Heat should unleash Bam Adebayo on defense or continue to hide him on the less talented big at the beginning of games? Jordan's referring to what Eric Spoelstra has been doing when going up against a big front court rotation, particularly if there's a superstar, either a Giannis Antetokounmpo or an Anthony Davis, where Bam Adebayo isn't guarding that player right away and is mostly putting Myers Leonard, who has been starting, on those bigs and then having Bam guard the power forward or lesser center, whoever it might be. It's something that happened against Denver as well with Nikola Jokic. And I'm not sure that it's the right move, to be honest with you. I like what Jordan's suggesting here, that Bam is clearly a good enough defender where he can at least limit those bigs, either Karl-Anthony Towns, Nikola Jokic, Anthony Davis, those kinds of players. But the reality is that in today's NBA, those superstars are going to get foul calls. And that takes Bam out of the equation, because if he's going to be picking up early fouls in the first quarter, which he's less likely to do guarding a Paul Millsap or a Gorgui Dieng or something along those lines, a lesser player, if you will, then we can't afford to have, Miami cannot afford to have Bam pick up early foul trouble, because if he does, that takes Miami's offense and throws it out for, throws it for a loop. And he is such an active participant on offense because of his rebounding and playmaking ability, because of his stellar defense, his versatility on picking up perimeter scores, all the things that Bam does so well, that you'd rather have those for the last three quarters and then trust that Myers, who's only getting a few minutes per game anyway, especially if he picks up some considerable foul trouble, you can always just use Myers sparingly, bring Kelly Olynyk to do the same, bring Chris Silva to do the same. But you can replace either one of those players with the other two options, either Chris Silva or Olynyk. But you can't replace Bam. He's too intrinsic to what Miami does, both offensively and defensively. So for me, from my perspective, I think that he should continue being utilized the way he is, because you don't want to take those chances. Even in a playoff setting where you're going up against the same players for four, five, six, seven games potentially, you can pick up certain traits. You learn how to defend those players a little bit better. But at the same time, from the offensive player's perspective, they're going to know what Bam's weaknesses might be. They're going to be able to figure out that Bam might jump a little too early, or that
you
Bam
are
might
locked on
an
Heat.
Update, things
your
of that
daily
sort,
Miami Heat
trouble.
Podcast.
So
part
you
of
want
the
to
Locked
avoid
On
that at all
Podcast
costs.
Network.
I think it's a good
your
strategy.
Team,
to be honest with you. We
every
haven't
day.
Seen it burn any one player. If you recall, against the Lakers, it wasn't Anthony Davis being guarded one-on-one by Bam that was a situation or was a problem. It was actually Anthony Davis being able to exploit the zone defense that Eric Spoelstra went to for a little bit too long, because he was in that position there in between the free throw line and the three-point line, where he was just having one foot out of the paint and then was able to cut into the paint for an easy basket, or if there was a cutter from his team moving along the baseline or something like that, he was able to pass it off at the last second. They got some pretty easy offense that way. So to be honest with you, I think we'll probably continue seeing this, because it's a good strategy. You can afford to lose Myers Leonard. You can afford to even go through Kelly Olynyk if you have to bring him off the bench, but you can't afford to lose Bam. And so we're probably going to see this continuing throughout the rest of the season. Huddy22 asks, does trading for Andre Iguodala make the Heat a threat to reach the Eastern Conference Finals? Can they even package Deion Waiters and James Johnson plus someone else? Well, to the first part of the question, would adding Andre Iguodala make the Heat a threat to reach the Eastern Conference Finals? I'm not sure if they would be a clear favorite at that point. Chances are they probably would. Andre, even at his age, is still an experienced veteran. He still can space the floor pretty well. He can still defend pretty well, especially in the playoffs. If you add him late in the season, he's removed from the team right now. He's not active with the Memphis Grizzlies. And so he is saving himself. He's not going through the wear and tear. You expect that a player like Iguodala, who has always been in pretty good shape, would still be able to keep his conditioning going, even if it's not up to Heat standards. But the reality is that he's probably still in good enough shape to contribute to a contender right away if Miami finds himself in that position. Now, that would resolve any issues you have as to whether or not you have to start Duncan Robinson, who's been the starting small forward for most cases, unless you have, in the situations where Justice has been injured or out of the lineup for some reason, which we've seen a lot of lately. And if that's the case, then you can always plug Andre in there. And again, he could provide some pretty solid defense. He's not the kind of playmaker that the rest of them are. He doesn't space the floor as well as Duncan Robinson. So there are some give and take there as far as which is a better player. Andre is clearly still the better player, but there are some limitations. He will be able to provide defense. You can't put him on a Giannis. You can't put him on a Ben Simmons. You can't have him guard multiple players, and he can do that. So it's valuable to have him. I just don't think that's what he wants. As far as what he wants, he would prefer to go to a clearer contender, probably a team in Los Angeles, either the Clippers or the Lakers, because he's a very good fit there. And that would be his preference. As far as what the Grizzlies want, maybe they'd take Deion. Maybe they'd take James Johnson. They've already had James on their team, so I'm not so sure they're eager to have that experience again. He doesn't make a lot of sense, although he'd be a backup for Jaren Jackson Jr. or Jonas Valanciunas. But they'd also want a first-round pick, and I'm not sure that Miami's willing to include a pick for a short-term rental of Andre Iguodala, even if it does help their chances to advance past a Milwaukee or a Philadelphia in the Eastern Conference Finals. So as much as that trade sounds like it would be fun for Miami to acquire a proven veteran with championship experience, I don't see that as likely as happening. Leonardo T. asks, the Heat need scores. We want to win. Is it possible to open a roster spot up for Carmelo Anthony? Send Waiters, Derek Jones Jr., Justice Winslow, and get some scores. Maybe CP3? Well, the CP3 situation is probably not going to happen. I think Oklahoma City clearly is struggling. They have not been the kind of team that I had expected them to be. They're struggling to find offense. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is their future there. And Chris Paul is not playing as well as I had expected him to be honest with you. He looked like he was in great shape over the offseason, and he struggled a little bit, but he's probably just finding his range there. He's finding his role. And at the same time, I don't think he is pushing himself nearly as hard as he can because, well, they're not really competing for anything in Oklahoma City. He's biding his time until he can join a contender at the end of his contract or maybe just ride out that contract. So Oklahoma City doesn't seem intent to trade him unless they want a first-round pick in return. Again, something that Miami is probably unwilling to do. So I would not think that the Chris Paul option is a realistic one for Miami. As far as Carmelo Anthony is concerned, I see that even less likely, to be honest with you. Carmelo, if you're seeing the struggles play out with Deion Waiters, who is just 27, who is capable of providing higher level defense than Carmelo probably ever was, and can provide some scoring, and definitely can provide some scoring from the perimeter, you're not going to get any of that with Carmelo. So I understand there's an appeal there because Carmelo Anthony is a big name, a proven name, but he's older, he's less willing to accept a lesser role. And so you're going to get a lot of the same conflicts that you're seeing with Deion and for a lot less return of investment. So I'm not sure that that's a realistic one. As far as an open roster spot, well, they've already got one. They can't fill it with anybody because right now they are maxed out as far as the salary cap is concerned. So they would need to move several players in exchange for another player. And then you're still taking on like salary. And so it seems very likely that you couldn't just add a player, either Carmelo Anthony or anything like that. If they're going to add a player to their full-time roster, it's probably somebody they already have on there, which is Chris Silva. So I wouldn't expect Leonardo to see Carmelo or Chris Paul in a Heat uniform anytime soon. Although I think that there could be some, there's some familiarity there with Jimmy Butler. I think specifically Carmelo played with Jimmy on the Olympic team a few years ago. And so there would be no problems necessarily as far as incorporating Carmelo into the roster. He's a good clubhouse guy and everything else, but at the same time, he is not the player he once was, and even the player he once was wouldn't always necessarily be a good fit in Miami's current roster. JJack44 writes, watching the last 5 minutes of a Sixers game, and is it crazy to think Miami should have kept Josh Richardson and traded Justice Winslow as a better fit? Obviously thinking in hindsight, but I think Jay Rich would have been a better fit. Yeah, so do I. And I'm sure a lot of people do. I think Justice is struggling a little bit with his off-ball movement there. He's not sure how to play alongside other playmakers like Jimmy or Chris or Kendrick Nunn or anyone, to be honest with you. I think they all have to have the ball in their hands, Tyler Hero, Goran Dragic, etc. And so for Justice, he wants the ball in his hands. He's struggling with how to figure it out. And I think Josh Richardson is a little bit more willing to play that off-ball role. And he would obviously be a better fit because of his perimeter defense and everything else. So you're using him in a lesser role, which is probably what he's best suited for, and that's what he's going to be in Philadelphia, which is why he can be as effective. Now, there's still going to be struggles there with Josh as an offensive player, but I think he's a little bit better from the perimeter than Justice is, and so he'd be a better fit here. And he's a good enough playmaker where you wouldn't be losing a significant amount of playmaking, even though Justice seems to be a little bit better as a quote-unquote point guard or an initiator of offense. So either way, I think you're right, J-Jack. I think J-Rich would certainly be a better fit here. Coming up next, is it time to add some fire, specifically a fire-breathing dragon, to the starting lineup? You're listening to Locked On Heat. Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment. Start listening with a 30-day Audible trial. Choose one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA and start today. Get into some potential trades for a big man in the next segment, but first, Josh Van Meter asks, what are your thoughts on assistant coach Chris Quinn? He seems knowledgeable and certainly has a good player development skill. Do you think he'll get a head coach offer at some point like a lot of our other assistants have? Well, that's an interesting question there. I have not heard anything specifically bad or good about Chris. I think, my former co-host Wes Goldberg had a chance to speak to Chris Quinn in summer league play when he was the coach there, and obviously Quinny has a pretty good reputation as a hard-nosed driven player. He fits the Heat culture very well, and that he took limited talent, at least in context of the NBA, and he was able to generate a pretty long career as a result. He's a good hard worker, he's a grinder, and that kind of again fits the mold of what they want in their coaching staff and among their players. And yeah, he does have a good reputation as a player development guy because he does help you, he does push you, he's still willing to mix it up there. Something that's essential, I think, for players to see their coaches kind of be active and involved, and Quinny's still young enough and able to do so. So as far as whether he'll get a head coaching offer, I think he still needs to pay his dues. If you saw what happened with David Fizdale, and I'll bring that up in a moment, he spent a lot of time during Miami's most successful era, the Big Three, and he developed a big reputation, a good reputation around the league. And even then, we're starting to see that that's not necessarily easy to live up to. He struggled in Memphis. He's struggling now in New York City. And there's a very good chance that he's going to be unemployed soon. The Knicks are looking to actively fire David Fizdale from reports that we've heard. And if that's the case, I wouldn't be surprised to see Fizdale return to Eric Spoelstra's coaching staff. He's always gone along with Spo. He had a good fit here. And he might be the kind of player, I'm sorry, might kind of be the coach that can interact with players to help smooth things over. He was so intrinsic in helping players like LeBron and others kind of understand. We've talked about this before, Wes and I, and I've mentioned it a number of times. As far as Udonis Haslem's value is concerned, is that he is a buffer between the front office, the coaching staff, and the players. There is a very clear feeling that coaching staff and front office is them, management, versus the labor force, which is the players, obviously. And so even as much as we'd love to believe that there is a camaraderie at all levels, that's not really the case. It's there sometimes, but it's not always there. And so you always need either a player or a coach that's kind of the go-between, kind of the guy who gets the player to buy in, to understand that they might need to take a lesser role. We're seeing it play out now with Dion Waiters. If you had a Fizdale on staff, I wonder if he'd be the type of player, I'm sorry, the type of coach, again, who could work with Dion, get him to buy into his role a little bit better and understand that maybe there's a way for him to go about pushing for more quality time and more consistent playing time. And maybe we wouldn't see the situation play out the way it currently does. I'm not sure that Quinn is that guy just yet. I'm not sure if he is the player's coach that could get them to buy into their role. I think he's more an extension of Eric Spoelstra than a go-between the players and the coaching staff. And so I don't know. I don't think Quinn is going to get a coaching offer, a head coaching offer anytime soon. It might be at the collegiate level. And if that's the case, he'll probably take it because that's the best way of working your way up the ranks. If you prove yourself as a college coach, and if you're willing to accept the responsibilities of recruiting and fitting into NCAA's archaic rules and everything else, and you succeed beyond all odds, then that's a good chance of you translating from the college ranks into pro ranks, which I think is ultimately the goal for Quinn and most coaches. Sean asks, Goran Dragic should be starting and Kendrick Nunn should be coming off the bench. Give the rookie a chance to thrive against second string players and build its consistency. Well, we're also seeing Goran Dragic thrive in that role off the bench. And to be honest with you, I think you'd rather have Goran, who's a little bit more proven, a little bit more savvy, and I think a more of a complimentary player than Kendrick is coming off the bench. I think I like Goran coming off the bench, to be honest with you. I should add that Carl Headley also asked the same question, or a similar one. Should Dragic start? He follows up with, once he came into the game versus the Lakers, our offense seemed to start clicking. Yeah, that's absolutely the case because he's playing against lesser players, but he understands when these lineups are staggered, he knows how to go against other team starters. And so I think that's something that he kind of is still capable of doing at a higher level than Kendrick Nunn is. And I think for Kendrick, it's a good opportunity for him to learn to make those adjustments. You want to see what you're getting out of him. And again, all of this is house money, as they say. Kendrick shouldn't have been in the lineup in the first place. If this friction between Deion and the coaching staff had never manifested the way it has this season, we wouldn't be hearing about Kendrick Nunn. Tyler Herro would be getting his minutes because, well, he's a lottery pick from this year and because he spaces the floor as well as he does. And so I think that he'd still be getting some significant playing time. But Kendrick wouldn't be getting the same kind of playing time that he has been. He certainly wouldn't be starting because of Deion's presence on the team. But now that we're seeing him in there, this is a learning opportunity. We can see him kind of evolve a little bit and see whether or not he's capable of handling more attention from opposing defenses, whether or not he's capable of playing more of a complementary and efficient role, something that I think we saw from him in the most recent game against Los Angeles, where he wasn't the kind of gaudy scorer that we had seen earlier in the season. And he was just more of a, you know, I know where to pick my spots. I know how to get my offense going, and I don't have to take 20 shots in order to do so. To be honest with you, I think Goran still needs a ball in his hands a lot, and he's more comfortable in that role, which is why he's got that role coming off the bench, which is another reason why it might be difficult for him to work alongside Justice Winslow if he's reduced to a bench role. And I say reduced, but let's be honest, it's not really a significant reduction. I mean, Lou Williams, Goran Dragic, other six men around the league, all those guys still thrive. They're closers. They're essential players to their team. It's just there are some connotations within the league, among players, as to who starts. And so I think that's a significant part of it, is that, you know, for a guy like Dragic, he's comfortable where he is in his career, and so he's not as concerned about ego and appearances and things of that sort. And I think that's pretty important for Kendrick, who's trying to prove himself, trying to prove that he's an actual NBA player, not just the G League player that he was last year. It's a little bit more important, a little bit stronger a vote of confidence for him to be in the starting lineup. So I would expect it to stay the same way it does. Is it time for the Heat to bolster their big man rotation? We'll look at some trade possibilities next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and a review, especially if it's a good one. Edwin Hernandez asks, is there a trade package centering Winslow for either Blake Griffin or Kevin Love to add consistent big men scoring for Miami? Well, you'd certainly have to include Winslow there, because I think at this point in time, his value is probably still at an all-time high, because we did see him thrive when he had the ball in his hands in the first three games of the season, and we've seen him struggle a little bit with the return of Jimmy Butler to a lesser role. And so I think you can sell teams on the fact that Justice is still capable of being a playmaker, a starting level point guard, and as well as a versatile defender, or somebody that you want to stick into the front court. If you still want to keep him as either your small forward or power forward, he certainly would be a fun option there for a lot of teams. But if you look at what's going on in Detroit, I'm not so sure that they would want him there. They've got enough they've got cap situations there. Would be a, would he be a better fit than Reggie Jackson or Luke Kennard? Yeah, probably. He might be a better fit in Detroit than he would be in Cleveland, where they've already got a number of point guards there that are trying to find their way in this league. And I think that having Justice added to that rotation would complicate things and would just create a logjam there that most teams would want to avoid. So I wouldn't say that a Cleveland trade is possible. And plus, from both teams' perspective, if they're giving up those respective superstars, you're going to want something significant in return. You have to show your team and your fans that you have, you're getting something quality, whether it's a long-term piece like a first-round pick or a couple of players that have a high amount of upside. And I don't think Justice is that. Even Justice and, say, Derrick Jones Jr., and maybe if you throw in a Deion Waiters or a James Johnson, it would have to be all three of those players plus a first-round pick. And that seems like a lot of depth to give up, and especially when there's still potential for Justice to figure it out because of his age and because of his overall talent level. You know, I think if you do add a Blake, again, you're going to see him in a reduced role. He's very effective in transition opportunities. He brings the ball up court. He makes plays for other. It's an underrated part of his game is that he does make plays. With Kevin Love, he's probably a better fit to Miami because he's more of an off-ball player at this point. He's a rebounder. He's an active shooter. All the things that we expected and saw from him over the last few years when the Cavaliers were making their title run. And he'd probably be a better fit, but Cleveland's not going to give him up for anything. Not unless there's a first-round pick attached. And then you're locking yourself in to this incredible salary that's not going away anytime soon. And I think Miami would want to keep some more salary cap freedom there to add a Victor Oladipo or a Giannis Antetokounmpo or another potential star that comes up in the free agent market over the next few years. So I wouldn't count it. Yo Cristo asked, do you see the Heat trading for a big? Honestly, I do not. I think they're pretty stuck with what they are. I think there are options to move players, but all the players that they're willing to move, either James Johnson or Deion Waiters or even Derrick Jones Jr., have faults. In the case of Derrick Jones Jr., he's probably your best quote-unquote asset, and moving him is a fine idea because eventually he's going to become a free agent and Miami's not going to be able to pay him, nor are they going to be willing to pay him. And if that's the case, moving him now when you can get something in return probably makes a lot of sense, but I'm not sure what you're getting in return. And so I can't see a potential trade there in the works, to be honest with you. I think they're content with Myers Leonard's work ethic and his fit in this team, the fact that he can space the floor and that he's a better playmaker than we had expected. They like the rotation of Kelly Olynyk and Myers Leonard there, so I don't think that that's going to change, which leads to another question about the big man rotation from Andre Willingham, who wrote in via email saying, Orlando has one too many bigs and they just gave Nikola Vucevic a hefty contract. Backup center Mo Bamba seems like he isn't going to be given an opportunity to develop an Orlando system. A lineup of Bamba, Adebayo, Winslow, Butler, and Nunn would dominate on defense, and Bamba is showing some promise shooting the three. Thoughts? Well, there's a reason why he's not developing an Orlando system. It's because he's gone through injury issues. He's also not particularly great right now. He's struggling with the physicality of the league because he's 7'5" and he's strong, but he's also kind of slight. He's more of a really stretched out small forward, to be honest with you. He's not capable of handling the bump and impact of the paint, and so I'm not sure that he's capable of fitting into Miami's rotation as an easy fit there. I just don't see it. And as far as the 3-point shooting, he's still shooting below 30% from three-point range there. He's only taking 1.5 attempts, two attempts per game, but he's only hitting 30% of those. So not particularly great. And although you like his potential, if you're more into a win-now mode, I'm not sure that he's going to be the option for you. To be honest with you, I haven't been impressed with Bamba. I thought he was going to take a leap there, but Steve Clifford has had a problem working Nikola Vucevic, getting him to play at the same level he did last year when he was an all-star, while also giving opportunities to Jonathan Isaac and Aaron Gordon, not to mention the fact that they added Al-Farouq Aminu as a free agent there. So they've got a glut there at the forward spot, and they're not quite sure how to alleviate that. And while trading Bamba seems like a good fit, they'd probably want to bolster their guard rotation a little bit better, and I think that's probably what they'd be more interested in getting. Although Justice is a fit in that sense, I'm not sure if the salaries match up. And either way, do you want to give up Justice Winslow for Mo Bamba straight up? probably not a good decision. I think Justice is still the better player and the better fit in Miami's roster. So as much as Mo Bamba seems like an option, it's not one for Miami. I wouldn't doubt that Orlando trades him. I just don't see it happening with Miami. So thank you for your suggestion, Andre, but unfortunately, I don't see Mo Bamba being a part of Miami's future. But Miami's future does include the Detroit Pistons when they're back on the floor tomorrow at the AAA when they take on Detroit, and we'll see if Blake Griffin is available to play. He's playing on the second night of a back-to-back after returning to the lineup on Monday. But check back here for my recap after the game. But that's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support. Yeah! Wrap it up, B.